Welcome to Talent Hub Talk. I'm Ben Duncombe, and on this podcast, I will be interviewing prominent and inspirational figures from both the local ANZ and global Salesforce Ohana. In today's episode, I'm joined by Gemma Blessard. Gemma is the CEO of the Architect Club and has previously been a guest on the podcast, but a lot has changed since we last caught up. So this was a great opportunity to catch up with Gemma and hear more about the Architect Club, what the initial vision for the business was, and how all of those plans are coming together. We touch on how important it is to have the right architect in place and the right sounding board for when you're going through a Salesforce transformation. We look at how the role of an architect has changed over the years, and then touch on how Gemma has found running a business and being the CEO of a business rather than just focusing on the architecture piece, which she's done in the past. We look at the biggest challenges she's found of running a business through COVID, and then we look at how she has approached building a team and getting the right people in the team. We also then touch on Ladies Be Architects and the amazing initiative that Gemma and the team have run over the years and what the plans are for this movement moving forward. So really good to catch up with Gemma. It's great to hear how the business is going and growing, and really hope you enjoy this episode. And if you do, please do subscribe for future episodes that are coming through. Gemma Blessard, thank you so much for being on the podcast again.
Thank you. And thanks for pronouncing my name right.
Yeah, I'm glad I got it right. So last time I saw you was in the UK. Myself and Gemma were back for, it was the Christmas party, like maybe two Christmases ago. And then You were on the podcast in the early days of the podcast when we were recording in San Fran. So a lot has changed since then.
It really has, yes. Life and the world, I think, has changed dramatically.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So we went through your career and your journey last time. So we'll direct people to that if they're interested in hearing more about that. But I think it's a good time now to look at the other angle, and that's you as a business owner and some of the initiatives that you've been running since we caught up last time. So we'll focus on the Architect Club and what you've been doing in that space. So I guess if you could kick that off with telling us a bit about how that came to be and what the initial vision for the Architect Club is.
Absolutely. The Architect Club is actually a culmination of a 13-year observation journey, if that makes sense. As you know, I've been consulting for quite a long time, nearly 13 years in Salesforce, and I've grown up in the Salesforce ecosystem. I joined it pretty much 2 years into my career after uni. So I have grown up in the Ohana.
Yeah.
So my vision for the Architect Club was about taking a step back and looking at why projects are failing, why projects are succeeding, why some projects are just meh, and looking at some of the trends in attitude and behavior when people buy Salesforce and people implement Salesforce. I've always believed that Salesforce is a people tool. You're recording information about people and your interactions with those people and the opportunities that you are working on with those people. So I firmly believe as implementers, it's our responsibility to ensure that the maximum success of the project results from a people focus. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
There's a lot of really useful experience that I gained that led to this. When I was at IBM, I was exposed to design thinking concepts, and I loved the concept of it. I loved the process that you can go through with design thinking, with thinking about what your users want, need, what they're responsible for, what their duties are, and actually what makes them feel better about work. And actually coordinating that with business process and with legislatory needs, security needs, integration needs, etc., to come up with your backlog. And I've always felt that it's actually the biggest problem with Salesforce projects to date has been the requirements in many situations. Requirements are written in a huge variety of styles. They are interpreted in a huge variety of ways. And what I wanted to bring was the thought and attention towards those requirements when we implement Salesforce, but not just what's happening inside Salesforce, but what's happening on the periphery and what's happening in the wider system landscape. And really the story of this is that as consultants, we've all been given a statement of work at some point and we've read it and gone, I wish I had been involved in these conversations a lot earlier on, because what you want me to build here is going to affect your security model that you want to build. You've got 10 billion records and you want them all in Salesforce and you want a private security model. Oh, but then you want, you know, often you look at these things, you just go, oh my goodness, but it's too late. You still have to deliver it. So as an architect, your hands are completely tied. You're constrained. You're very limited to scope and budget, etc. And as a result, sometimes clients don't get what they're looking for with Salesforce.
Sure.
They're like, okay, we've implemented it, but it's not working for us. We're not quite sure why it's not working for us. But, you know, and the first people who get blamed are the implementation consultants all the time, or the contractor. And so what I wanted to bring with the Architect Club is two things. One, a home for people who develop their experience and knowledge and are taking a holistic view, whether it's focused on business architecture, technical architecture, Salesforce solution architecture, or data. They are leaders in their field. They have experience and certifications. They have been there, seen it, done it, and they're sick of not being able to do their best work. So what we've done for them is to take the scope out of the question and say, right, now you can sit alongside a client and assist them, get an understanding of the picture of what's going on, and then help to get some direction for that client who is either preparing for a Salesforce program or is in the midst of a program that is perhaps experiencing some challenges. On the other side of the market, what we're trying to bring is a concierge layer to complex programs. And Salesforce, they're growing, they're selling into household names now, which means there's more complexity in the architecture and it needs more thought. So we're bringing an additional concierge layer. So if a client's bought Salesforce and wants to stand their own team up, we can assist. We won't do the building for them, but we'd be there to guide them and assist them and give them best practices and do QA design, check specs, all of those things, just to and also help those people raise their own experience and knowledge levels and best practices. And also on projects, if there is an implementation partner, we're not there to compete. We're not there to check work. We are there to collaborate and put our arms around everybody on the project, whether that means we help the client understand how best to articulate their requirements so that the implementation partner can take that, interpret it correctly, and build what's needed. But equally, we can also raise to the client, right? If you ask them to do that, they're going to ask you for a decision on this. So who do you need to talk to get that decision? So that's the idea, is to smooth things over. But also from the implementation partner side, we're in a strong position to also collaborate with them, with the AE at Salesforce, to build a strong team that is servicing this customer's best interests. Even if there are three organizations involved, that's the principle of it, is that we're there not to extract hours and hours and hours and hours and hours of money and work and to try and over-engineer solutions so we get more hours. I'm not saying that happens all the time. It has happened a couple of times in my experience, but we're there with the very purest role of helping customers get prepared and helping customers get their house in order.
So is there a company size or a project size that is too small for an architect, or is this something that, like, every company that has a Salesforce plan, whether that's a plan that they've already bought licenses or they're planning to do something with Salesforce, or they already have it and they're looking to do a project, like, is this a service that makes sense to any company that is on a Salesforce journey?
Well, we have a variety of different models to service different sizes of business. But when you need an architect, it's generally because there's a burning question about where is Salesforce going to fit with the rest of everything that we've got? How are we going to make sure it doesn't become a free-for-all with so many system admins? You know, and you start to look into those areas. So for us, actually, our ideal client, people ask us what industries we work in. We work across all industries because architecture is a similar consideration. Yes, there are nuances and differences between industries and different solutions and packages, but ultimately, we're still looking at the same things: data, security, experience, etc. I think an architect is needed when you've got layers of complexity and uncertainty. Obviously, with smaller businesses, it's more restrictive. I couldn't afford to get an architect in, but equally, I've got a team of architects here that can help me build my Salesforce, etc.,
sure,
and make sure it's scalable. But it's generally a profile of customer that we speak to.
Sure. So when you're engaged, and let's say a company they've started their Salesforce journey, right? So they've got some sort of Salesforce instance. What's the consistent issue that has caused you now being invited in? Like you mentioned requirements and like requirements not being clear, but is there one pain point that keeps coming up, which is finding customers in a bit of a mess?
Yeah, people. It's rarely the technology that causes the red and amber projects, I would say. It's often the most consistent issues I see are around quality of requirements, are around understanding of how Salesforce and SaaS in general works. We've got a lot of people transforming from on-premise into fully cloud. So we still, you know, it was a lot more 10 years ago. We were more often having to have those conversations about, oh, it's not on your own servers, etc. But every now and again, you do get those issues. The consistent issue is people. If you don't put your people, your users and your customers, when you start designing Salesforce, if you don't prioritize that view, it's going to be harder for your people to adopt it. So that for me is a consistent issue. There's also issues with necks on the line, politics as well. When you get a difficult customer, you have to look behind why they're being difficult. What are they dealing with at the moment? And as an implementation consultant, you've got a scope to deliver. It's not really something you can focus on very much. But if you're independent, you don't work for Salesforce, you don't work for the consulting partner, you don't work for the client, but you know Salesforce and you know where you can share behaviors and approaches that have been really successful in previous projects. Being that independent advisor that kind of gently goes, do you know what? What they're proposing is great. It's a great design solution, but you're going to need to think about a team that's going to handle this. And what is the operating model going to be around Salesforce? And being independent from that means that we can focus on the success side without working for Salesforce, because sometimes clients don't want to have the vendor involved. They want someone unbiased.
That's a really important point, being independent, but like being a different voice in the room, because I do feel that a lot of the time a customer doesn't know what a customer doesn't know, just like anything, right? So like if you're proposed a solution by a partner, then you're paying them money to deliver the solution that should be best for your business. But it's, unfortunately, like you said, there are variations to what's best for your business. And there sometimes can be politics involved in delivering a solution in time and you know, the capabilities that partner has. So that extra voice in the room is really powerful. And if it's just a sounding board, even that's really a vital piece of a successful project.
Yeah, and it helps us as well. If we know the client has got some other issues they're dealing with, and we can gently steer or guide the implementation partner, or if the client is happy for us to be transparent, we can communicate that and then strategize on the best way to deal with that situation on both sides, if you like.
So you mentioned before that you wanted to create a home for people that want to be doing the right thing. And so if we look back, like, I mean, you've been in the Salesforce ecosystem a lot longer than me, but even when I moved into the ecosystem around 6 years ago, you had solution architect, you had technical architect. It's changed, right? There seems to be lots of different flavors. Now delivery is a real thing, like how DevOps and you mentioned data architecture. What flavors of architects do you need in a business like yours? Like, do you just need a solution architect and a technical architect and or multiple of each? Or do you have people that, you know, are really industry specialists or perhaps delivery specialists or data architects? Like, is that now the way the market's going in your view?
Yes, and I think it needs to, because clients need to know when they're buying a project or implementing Salesforce, they need to know what roles they're buying for consultancy. So unfortunately, we do have to say this is going to be this role. These are the responsibilities they're going to have on your project. So if you're selling services, yes, it's another way to ensure full coverage on your project, because certainly at the Architect Club, we have taken some time to look at, when you're on a project, how are all the concerns separated between a project? So, for example, if I'm deployed as a solution architect and I'm working on a Financial Force PSA implementation and Sales Cloud and Service Cloud, often there's going to be a lot of integration because customer service reps need that information to hand when they're servicing queries. For me as an SA, I want to know, okay, if we've got Financial Force PSA in here, what's the role of support in that Do we need to create projects and manage costs for those? You know, what kind of visibility do you have into your service costs, etc.? So those are conversations that involve multiple packages and the strategy around managing those. And you need a solution and technical architect in there so that the solution architect can understand, okay, what is the extent that these packages will mix together to create an experience for the user. But the technical architect is going, okay, how do I then pull in the information securely in a performant fashion that complies with IT policies and standards that this company has? And if they don't have them, we need to set them. Do you see what I mean? The way I see these roles is that you don't necessarily need to have all of them on a project. You might have just an SA or a TA, or you might be doing a discovery where you need to look at the whole program. So an enterprise architect is more appropriate because they're looking at what do we implement first as MVP, what's the benefits that are realized from that, and then what do we go on to the next part of the roadmap to deliver, etc. I wouldn't necessarily ask a solution architect to do that necessarily. I might ask them to do it for their work stream. I might ask them to plan their work stream and say, what resource do you need? What's going to happen in each sprint? Absolutely. But when it comes to the wider program of where does this work stream fit within not just Salesforce, but our wider MDM program? We're rolling out a data warehouse. How does Salesforce fit with that, etc.? I wouldn't necessarily ask a solution architect to do that, but I would ask an enterprise architect to do that because they have different skill sets at those levels.
Yeah, I think it's there are now different skill sets, right? And I think that as the complexity of projects evolve and get bigger and more challenging, like we'll probably see more architecture roles evolve and spin up and like more specialisms within architecture. So like you mentioned before, like a data architect, there's probably going to be more data architects than there are now in the future because there'll be a need for someone that has that kind of vertical specialization, I would imagine.
There's loads of data architects out there who aren't doing Salesforce yet or are doing Salesforce. They're not part of our ecosystem, and we'd love to have them all, to be honest.
Yeah, and we'll need them.
We will, because the more data you've got, the more complex the architecture. You've got to start looking at where you're storing things and how you're accessing them, how you're backing them up, how you're going to recover them. What's your business continuity plan? You know, these are all things that, as an implementation partner delivering a technical implementation, absolutely you could discuss with the client, but the client has booked you to deliver their project. And often we bat that over the fence and say, okay, client, that's your responsibility. We can, this is how Salesforce will do it.
Yeah.
Now you have to go inside. And sometimes those clients are like, but I don't know where to start and I need someone who knows Salesforce who can help me. And I can't ask those guys because they're just doing their statement of work and it's going to be a change request.
Yeah, it's so true. So running a business, how have you enjoyed that?
Oh my God. It's been interesting, very interesting. I have learned so much, so much. I've also learned a lot and I've been on a very personal journey with this, a journey about accepting what you don't know. And accepting that you can't know everything, and that even if you are the boss, it's okay to say you don't know something, and as a startup to say, do you know what, we're still figuring that out. And it's been fascinating for me being on the other side as well. I've contracted and I've worked for consultancy firms, and now I run one. And a lot of the ideas I had at the beginning, Some have worked, some of them have just been pie in the sky and just haven't worked in reality.
Yeah.
And, I've spent a lot of time beating myself up over those things. Gemma, why did you do that? Look at the knock-on effect it had on the revenue and all this sort of stuff. But that's the point of the first couple of years of a startup, right? Is that you fail fast, you learn early, and you pick yourself up. And I certainly feel like I've done that this last year. And I suppose the other biggest learning I've had is even though I'm the boss, I feel very much part of a team, each with its own unique set of skills and its own drive and desire and real belief in the vision that we have at the Architect Club to just, I get really, but as you can see, I'm very, very passionate about this and I'm finally living the dream. So
are you a good delegator?
I'm learning to be a better delegator. So I'm okay at delegating now. I wasn't a year ago.
Yeah, and it's all learning, right? I'm terrible at delegating, and it's just something that you kind of have to learn to do. But Yeah, I really do feel the pain because it's a real struggle. And especially when you're going through a crazy time like COVID and you're conscious of what's going on in the world around you and the impact that can have on your business. Therefore, it feels like the right time to do extra work. But in actual fact, you need a break more than ever, right?
You do. You really, really do. And it's not like you can just jump on. I mean, even when I go to London, it takes me probably about 90 minutes door to door, including car to the train station, train, and then everything else. But in that time, I mean, our Wi-Fi signal on our train is so bad. And so it's actually really quite a blessing because the only thing I can do is sit and play Candy Crush on the train. Sure. I can't work.
Yeah.
Can't have call on the train. So you actually do get periods of rest. Even if you're going to see a client, you get periods of rest. When you're at home, you just don't. But the way I manage it is this is my work space. As you can see, it's got my lanyards and my plushies and so on. So this is the room that I work in during the day. In the evening, I don't come to this room. And I've stopped playing The Sims in the evening because it was so addictive. It was keeping me up till 3 a.m.
I'm glad to hear you stopped that.
But yeah, I mean, too much screen time, definitely a risk. As well,
because we all know these things, right? But it's so hard not to do them. Like, we know we shouldn't look at our phone first thing in the morning, and we know that we should not look at the screen before we go to bed, and that we shouldn't over. But it's just like I feel at the moment it's like a hamster wheel, and it's just like nonstop. And yeah, it's and even more so in the UK because you can't go and have a break right now in terms of going away. And whereas here we have a bit more flexibility around going on short breaks and stuff. So yeah, I do feel for you, and hopefully your health is okay. And
it's getting better.
Yeah, so. That's good. And this is another point that you threw yourself into even more work through COVID, and you offered some Salesforce training as if you didn't have enough on your plate. You thought, you know what, I'm gonna help more people out there and offer some free Salesforce training. So can you talk us through that and kind of what that looked like and how that came to be?
Yeah, of course. When I started doing that, it was because I was on my own. I didn't have my daughter with me for about 5 weeks during the first lockdown. So there was one evening I was just scrolling through my local town's Facebook page and people were suffering. They were losing their jobs. They were struggling a lot. And so I had an idea and I thought about my situation. You're on your own in the evenings, Gemma. You've got two cats. They don't talk. There's not much on TV. You don't want to work. So why don't you do something to help these people? Because actually I thought personally I would enjoy it. It would fill my time as well. It would also bring me back to what I love, the tech, for a little while and be a nice refresher for me. Because I thought I won't prepare lots and lots of materials because that will take a lot of time. I'm going to just simply run people through Trailhead. Show them around, show them how to get the best out of Trailhead and in the first session, and then follow the Trailhead modules together in the training. It's not hard. And actually, I learned a few new things, a few new features that have come out that I just hadn't had the opportunity to play with in the last 5 years. So it was great. And it was also very comforting for me. I was shielded and my daughter, we weren't back at the time. We weren't sure what the rules were around co-parenting. So Molly stayed with her dad for that time. And this gave me some comfort, also helped me make more friends. I met some fantastic people. And yeah, just really, really enjoyed it.
So how many people did you help ultimately? And what's been the kind of knock-on effect for those people in the community?
I originally opened it up to local people in Bedford, where I live. Uptake was a bit small, so I pushed it to LinkedIn and it kind of went nuts.
As it does.
People went. And so I had to go through a prioritization process where I prioritized people who had never touched Salesforce, who didn't have any certification. There were people who had like 10 certifications wanting to come and learn Salesforce for free with Gemma, and I was like, that's lovely, but you know Salesforce, so by all means follow along with the recordings. But I tried to keep the actual class centered around complete beginners. So there were about 13 of us. There were about 35 on the first call, and then it dropped to about 13 who stayed consistently throughout. And three of them that I'm aware of so far have gone on to get jobs.
That's amazing.
Really crazy. It's wonderful.
13 new trailblazers and three have been fortunate enough to, and obviously they've put in the graph, but to secure a role, it's amazing. And yeah, it's just great to see, like, I think the amazing thing with Trailhead is it gives people that platform, right? It gives them the chance and the opportunity to learn and establish themselves. And And it's just a great community for people to get involved in.
Yeah, I think the only people sometimes find with it is that they can't find their way around very easily. So having someone there to guide them through it helped, I think.
Sure. Is there anything you absolutely do not like about running a business?
Yes. Yeah, cash flow.
Yeah.
I think that's the biggest thing. I think the second biggest thing is if you are working with an organization that doesn't always have the same views around project success, that and you still have to deliver for them, that can be quite tough.
Sure. And in terms of, so do you still get to do the stuff you love though, right? So you were saying that you've gone back to the tech, and are you still able to perform the role of an architect and run the business and do enjoy the day-to-day grind of architecture still?
Only part-time at the moment, and that's because I have a specialist skill set that none of the others have at the moment, so we're delivering some work in that space. So at the moment, I'm delivering kind of 50% of my time.
Sure.
And we've got two new starters coming in March who I'm starting to train up in that specialism so that I can get them up to speed, get them comfortable and confident, have a solution architect run alongside them, and then I can focus.
Yeah, nice. So how have you gone about building a team and getting the right people in a small business with a vision and wanting to do the right things? How do you make sure anyone coming into the business is right for the business?
I made some interesting decisions last year. At first, it was a bit wishy-washy. It was come work for me. I learned that lesson hard and fast. And that's not through anybody else's lack of skill set or personality or anything like that. It was that I realized that we needed to be hotter because we were firming up our market position, and our market position was independent premium. So we need to have leaders in our organization that can confidently walk into another organization and help them gain direction. Mm-hmm. So we implemented a recruitment process which enables us to, first of all, see who the person is and gain an idea of their experience, just standard kind of initial interview. Who are you? What kind of person? Are you a psychopath? Hopefully not. We actually give everybody in the Architect Club a practical task to complete, and that's the same whether you're an architect or solving a sort of business scenario and presenting it back to us, or whether you're in marketing and we need a 100-day plan and a strategy, present it back to us. So we found we get to know people better that way. We get a chance to see them in action. And there have been times when I thought someone was a definite shoe-in at first interview, but then they've not done great on the second interview. But then we have this amazing story of Nadia, who's just joined our team, and she was originally screened out. But she came back and said, no, this is my experience, da, 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 da. You will interview me. So then Chris said, all right, then, if you want me to interview you, here's the scenario. Off you go. Chew on that for a bit. She comes back and she says, I'm ready. When's Gemma ready for an interview? And I'm like, oh, my gosh, that's just inspiring.
Yeah.
I even said it on Facebook, how inspiring it was that she had acted like that. I was like, absolutely brilliant. And she kept on at us. And when she came to the interview, every requirement was justified. Every requirement had a pro, a con, a consideration, a knock-on effect on people, a knock-on effect on security. She answered the question. I was like, oh, amazing. And I just love that story, that she just had the guts to say, no, you will listen to me. I have got these skills. And also equally, Chris just went, great. Okay, get her in.
Yeah, nice. So I really like that when I get pushed back on by a candidate. Like, I push back a lot on clients if they're not like they'll do an initial screening and they'll screen someone out. But if I've sent a CV and I truly believe in that person, like I'll absolutely push back on. And if I've sent a CV, it means I believe in the person, because I wouldn't send the CV if I didn't.
Yeah.
But when a candidate pushes back on me, like if I give them feedback that I've received from the client and they really push back on me, like, I really admire them for that. Like, don't just accept you weren't right because of this. Like, dig and get to the bottom of it, because I think that really shows you're passionate, but also you're confident, and that's how you make leaps forward, if you truly understand why you weren't right, or if you can prove someone wrong.
Mm-hmm. And equally, giving feedback as an employer as well. I try to take detailed notes. We have a section set up in Salesforce called hiring feedback. So and it's got fields in to collect information. Like, do you see them working with us? Do you see them in front of our clients? And we share that feedback afterwards and say, look, you know, it's a no, but this is why. These are some tips for how you could improve and some ideal projects that will give you the exposure to that.
Sure. And that's something that if you can continue doing that as a business as you grow, like, it's amazing. I think a lot of companies set off like that and then it starts to fade away as they get bigger and that process, because everyone wants to have a good employer brand, right? And everyone wants to deliver a good candidate experience when they start hiring. And it's easier when you're small, but then when you start to grow and other people start doing interviews the businesses that I work with that do that and they're bigger, it's an amazing experience, even for the people that were a no.
Yes, even people that are a no. I've been told no before and by companies and they've not said why. And it's been fascinating because I'm like, I need you to give me something to work on, because that's valuable to me as a human is that knowledge. But equally, I also have always had a real firm focus on people and how they feel and all of that. I'm a very feeling person, so
sure,
it's important.
Yeah, 100%. So finally, Ladies Be Architects. It's been amazing to see like the brand grow from when we first met with you and spoke with you around the vision for that. And obviously to have people here in Australia now representing the brand, you've got people in America. It's been crazy. So where is that at and what does the future look like for Ladies Be Architects?
Well, obviously Ladies Be Architects is quite heavily event focused. You see us out at Dreamforce, but also we've been continuing our regular study groups. So we're still posting onto YouTube. Just a massive shout out to the team in Australia. That's Vicky, Emily and Adrienne, who have been consistently building content. They're running a platform app builder course.
Oh, I need to get involved in that. I've been saying I'll do my app builder forever and I just haven't got around to it. So yeah, I should...
Yeah, it's the one certification that people haven't voted to do each month in the study group. So we've got barely any content on it. So we're starting to build some of that. And honestly, it's down to the wonderful ladies in Australia who have completely orchestrated that and kept it going. And in terms of Ladies Be Architects at the moment, we have a few initiatives that we're working on and we're working closely with Salesforce. They've got a few programs coming out that are really special for the architects community. So we're reimagining our positioning alongside that to think about how best we don't, you know, to make sure we don't undermine Salesforce and they don't undermine us and so on. We've got a really good partnership. So we just make sure that everybody's happy. And really, I suppose this last year it has been on hold because of COVID, other than the study groups, because we can't get out there to see people and run our workshops.
Sure.
But we do have a plan to reboot some of our events this year and engage a lot more.
Yeah, amazing. So we should lock in another, let's say, 12, 18 months. The world will be another different place and I'm sure you'll be kicking even more goals. So good luck for everything. hopefully... Yeah, COVID clears off and we get to do some events and hopefully catch up in person at some point soon. The final message for anyone that's sitting on the fence about starting a business in the Salesforce ecosystem, what's your advice?
Oh my gosh. Your network is absolutely key. I have been able to benefit from some great mentors in this space and I have been able to have regular calls with them. I text them if I'm stuck on things. So I suppose for me, the biggest piece of advice, make sure you've got an idea in your head of who you're going to go to if you get stuck on different things. If you get stuck on finance, who's your finance expert? Who's your go-to-market expert? Tap into those people and accept that and don't go in there thinking, I'm going to know absolutely everything. I'm the CEO. You're not going to know absolutely everything. And also, it matters what your people think of you. It really does matter. To give people that experience. So I would say go into it with humility. Always think about how what you do now will scale. And I would also say have a V2 mum for your idea to start
with. Good shout. Well, thank you so much. I always love catching up and lots of value in there. And yeah, really great to hear the story of Architect Club and Ladies Be Architects and where things are going. So thank you so much. And we shall see you soon.
Thank you, Ben.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Talent Hub Talk. If you're enjoying the podcast, we'd love it if you could subscribe and also leave a short review. We're keen for this podcast to reach as many people.